community-minded conversations all across Wisconsin. You can find us at civicmedia.us and download the app for free today. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco, Sports Director for Civic Media. Right now, we're airing a Packers, Badgers, Brewers, or Bucks game over the air, but due to our rights agreements, we're not able to stream those games here. Civic Media might be a newer company, but we are dedicated to providing the best in sports coverage. Our team has decades of experience covering sports right here in Wisconsin. We've got Mike Clemens, who covers our state's biggest teams on location and does daily updates on all of our Civic Media stations statewide. Many of our stations have local reporters dedicated to teams in their area, covering their community dozens or even hundreds of times each year. No matter where you're at in Wisconsin, we are committed to covering sports, especially in the communities that our stations serve. And we put all of our local coverage right here on our stream, so you can go ahead and grab the free Civic Media app so you never miss a game at civicmedia.us/app. You can find the game you're looking for over the air, or you can stay tuned right here on the stream for more news, talk, and conversation. Thank you for listening to Civic Media from all of us here on the sports team.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
A Brewers win in Atlanta. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. The Brewers face the Braves again tonight after winning last night 3-1. Isaac Collins, a three-run homer. Starting pitcher Quinn Priester going seven innings. Manager Pat Murphy.
He's been sensational. I was kind of thinking today in about the fifth inning, this kid kind of represents who we are. Nobody knew who Quinn Priester was, and now they do. It's just amazing to see the kid just flourish the way he is.
NFL Packers defensive back Nate Hobbs is out for at least the next 3 weeks after having knee surgery over the weekend. GM Brian Gutekunst on why he signed Hobbs from the Raiders to a four-year deal worth $48 million.
Yeah, we're trying to become a certain kind of football team that can win and win, you know, deep into the playoffs. And there's a certain kind of a physicality that you have to have. And Nate Hobbs brings all that, and that's why we brought him here.
The team has re-signed defensive back Corey Ballantyne after he was released by the Colts. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I used to smoke. I thought of cigarettes as my best friend.
They were always there for me when I needed a break.
I also thought cigarettes were my best friend, and then they gave me peripheral artery disease.
I smoked and had a stroke. Actually, multiple strokes.
I smoked and have heart disease.
Here's my tip. If cigarettes are your friend, you need a better friend.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the CDC.
Listen to sports coverage from Mike Clemens on Civic Media stations all across Wisconsin.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Rand Paul. Oh, Rand Paul. Rand was on the Russell Brand podcast and came out with an interesting statement. He said, I think if we step back and we look at the Trump administration and Trump in history, the big debate will be over executive power. He said, this isn't a new debate. We've had it with the kings of England. We tried to form a republic where we limited the power of the executive and went on to basically rail on this without understanding he's one of the co-equal branches of government. Now, the thing is, Rand Paul acting shocked that Trump wants to be king. It's kind of like the fire chief being shocked that his house burned down after he ignored the fire alarms. Honestly, Rand, this isn't some twist. This isn't some, we didn't know. Trump has literally told everyone he wants to be a dictator. Joked about it at his rallies. You know, joked about it. He bragged about it on TV. The only thing he didn't break out was the crown, the velvet robes, and, well, somebody feeding him grapes while he rewrites our Constitution on a cocktail napkin. So no one should be shocked. No one gets to be stunned. No one gets to be outraged because he said who he is. We know. So all those people, I didn't vote for... Yeah, you did. And look, when you're... when your claim to fame is you're fired, and you let him fire people at will, and there's nothing to hold him in check. He gets to rewrite the rule books. He gets to take executive time to watch cable news all day. You get what you pay for. A guy who thinks checks and balances are just something you bounce at the bank. Yes, a bankruptcy shot. This isn't the American dream. It's a rerun of Game of Thrones with less hair and way scarier tweets. And if Rand Paul is just now worried about King Trump, maybe, I don't know, maybe he should ask why so many in Congress stood by and let him build the throne. We all saw it coming. And if we actually want to preserve what's left of our republic, it's going to take more than a libertarian podcast. And it might actually going to do your job in the Senate. I don't know. Maybe. And the thing that gets me is we're in this moment where the country's tense. The other day, I found myself in a long conversation with somebody talking about the anger in this country. Specifically, why so many people that we run into on a daily basis seem to be doing okay, but are angrier and angrier by the day. And this guy's like, you know, look at all we have. Why are people so furious? And, you know, it's a fair question. It really is. You walk down the street and you see, you know, in any town, you see big SUVs, big houses, people with the latest, greatest, you know what. But I got to wonder if the people who are driving them or holding those new iPhones, why they look like they're about ready to snap at any minute. And I wonder if maybe it's because all of this affluence is built on debt. Those shiny cars, those nice houses, sadly, often leveraged to the hilt. And while it may look like prosperity on the surface, underneath, maybe the anxiety is getting to people because wages haven't kept up. Job security is basically a joke. And in this era of Trump thinking everyone can be fired and, oh, by the way, the court's going along, kind of makes you wonder, maybe that's part of it. That mass insecurity, that people are worried they're one paycheck away from real desperation. Which maybe is why I got a lot of response from people who are on the extremes when I talk about homelessness. People who say, hey, how do we help them? People who are like, hey, screw them. I'm keeping up. Now, the weird thing is the guy I was talking to said, you know, Americans are just ungrateful and selfish. Maybe, I don't know. But is it really selfish to say we want to do better? Is it selfishness or is it, you know, frustration? That so many people are working harder, longer hours, producing more, and yet, well, the fruits of our labor don't ever seem to trickle down. Most wealth seems to find its way up to the few who sit in our rarefied air of the C-suites or the corporate boardrooms or the loge boxes at your local arena. While the reality is most working people lack the bargaining power and the unions to be able to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. Maybe, and this is where my mind goes, maybe folks, they know how unfair and how unjust the system is, and it ticks them off. And understand, that anger, easy, really easy to exploit. In fact, we've got an entire political party that preys on that. They make sure that they stoke that division. Because a united working class wouldn't be great for them. The reality is we live in a moment, and this is where I couldn't argue with the person that I was talking to. We live in a time where we have so much. If we had better leadership, if we had better direction, because understand, we've got resources, we've got technology, we should be having opportunity for people. In much greater levels. That ideal of work hard, play by the rules, get ahead. We should be living that in this moment. But yet everyone realizes we're one AI push, one automation scheme, one robotics. We're one technological advancement from being, well, out on the street. And we don't see our political leaders leading. We see everyone trying to figure out how to exploit the anger that's out there. And as I talk to this guy, I ask, because I don't know the answer, and I want to hear people's thoughts on this. Because, you know, people are saying, well, what should Democrats be doing? And I keep coming back to the wheelhouse should always be reward for work. The labor that you do should be able to keep a roof over your head, food on the table, clothes on your kids' back, health care so you don't go bankrupt, and retirement security so you don't have to worry about when you get older if you're going to end up being warehoused in some nursing home. Policies that, and I still want to believe that policies that lift us up and don't tear us apart is where Democrats should be. Now, am I naive? No. Because I understand negativity, the anger, the red meat. I understand. That moves people. It moves people much better than, hey, you know, we can all do better. The question is how do we get to a place where that anger, we figure out how to tap down? Because, man, I'll tell you, everybody I run into lately, They're like little powder kegs ready to burst. And the question is, again, I come back to, in a moment where we have so much, where there are so many opportunities, why are we so tense? Why are we so anxious? Why are we so angry? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, not great news, folks. Federal Appellate Court, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, they're allowing Trump's executive order, basically banning unions for about two-thirds of federal workers, and under the guise of national security, that's evidently going to happen. That overturns a lower court ruling. The court said that the president's authority on national security matters and that it deserves deference. And for that deference, we can destroy workers' rights. We can destroy their unions. We can destroy their collective bargaining agreements. Now, understand, the court said, yeah, we see retaliation. We see that. We see selective enforcement. Absolutely. But back to the national security and the deference to the president, we're going to gut the federal workforce. And I got to tell you, it's concerning on a number of levels in that who's going to stay? Who wants to do this? And here to share some thoughts on, well, what this could mean and what it's going to mean for federal workers, especially in our prisons. I've asked Dave Demas to come talk with us. He's the president of AFGE Local 3003. You can check out their website at afge.org. Dave, thanks for taking time for us.
First-time caller, long-time listener. Thanks, Rick.
I appreciate that. But let me ask you about this, because this is kind of a big freaking deal. This is giving the president the ability to break contracts, the ability to hire and fire anyone at will, and ultimately the ability to go, hey, Dave, if you can't name your favorite executive order of mine, You're fired. What?
Yeah, it's a shame. Most of these executive orders, at least the one that is we're talking about, we don't see that the agency that, you know, I'm working for, the Justice and the BOP, it doesn't seem like they're really into it. I know that a lot of the our local leaders and regional leaders, it seems like they want to keep it as status quo as we can at this point. So that means we're still trying to work together and keep everything as it's always been. So you know, we're still talking to them. We're negotiating. We're, you know, coming together for meetings once a month. It's just the way that this court hearing and court ruling is, it just doesn't make sense to me. We don't know what's going to happen. Everybody's stressed. You know, we're trying to continue to sign members in. You know, they took our dues deductions away from us. It's a lot of chaos. They're trying to starve the AFG with taking the dues deduction. So now we're trying to scramble and put them on our new system, e-dues, which it works. It's just something new, and not a lot of people like new things.
Right. No, absolutely. But here's the thing. I know you represent people who work in the Bureau of Prisons, and look, most of my correction officer friends tend to lean toward the right, toward the lean toward Republicans, because they view the Republicans as the party of law and order. So I got to ask you, you know, the pulse of your membership right now, your collective bargaining agreement's about to be destroyed, your union's about to be broken, and the party of law and order seems to be breaking all the rules. I can't imagine that this is going over really well with your members.
No. Yeah, we're about a 60, I'll say about a 60-40 split at our institution with Republicans to Democrats. You know, it's a lot of the rural areas up there in Weimar, Pennsylvania. So they voted for Trump, and, you know, they didn't vote for this. They voted for the kitchen table issues. They thought the gas was going to go down, the egg prices were going to go down, and, you know, keep the community safe, like a strong border, which, you know, everything's still up in the air. You know, now all these tariffs, it's going to bring revenue into the United States. Everything's going to fix itself. But As soon as you know, he got inaugurated, it kind of changed a little differently. It went a different direction in my eyes. And a lot of the men and women that I work with, they're like, we didn't vote for this. We had to lobby for to keep our retirement and all of our benefits, you know, with this reconciliation bills. It was brutal. A brutal couple months of just phone calls after phone calls after phone calls to Republicans, mostly just to let them know that you're gonna gut the entire federal workforce, like you mentioned, Rick. And it doesn't make sense to me. Everything's not national security. I work for the Department of Justice, so it's like, I work for the Department of Justice. I don't work for national security.
You're not under Homeland Security, right? So,
right.
You know, this is one of those things where you go, how is the prison up there in Pennsylvania, how is that in the purview of national security? But here's the reality. The reality is, if he gets to do what he wants to do, which is fire anyone who disagrees, because we saw that here recently with the firing of the commissioner at the BLS, your members are either, you better know your favorite executive order, or your life could be, well, in danger in your situation, or, you know, out the door. So in looking at this, I got to imagine your members look at their contract as the thing that keeps them safe, the thing that keeps them able to see their families, the things that keep their families fed. I got to imagine that's something they're internalizing.
They take it for granted. A lot of them take it for granted how much that contract actually means to them. That's their bargaining for everything that we have. It's your seniority, your annual leave, if we didn't have a master agreement, we called, we wouldn't have all those things. And, you know, they would just run ragged, and just the agencies will just do whatever they want. And that's a little safeguard. You know, the agency has one part of the master agreement. It's Article 5. The rest of it's pretty much for all the employees.
Well, safeguards. Let me ask you this, because, you know, I've taken flack over this position from Election Day. Since Election Day, I've been saying the solutions for our future, the solution to our problems, are going to come out of the suffering due to their savagery. We're going to have to live through some really, really bad stuff. and bad stuff's happening to people, and it's coming. The worse stuff is coming. Is this the kind of situation that maybe your members, you guys have done such a good job that maybe they, as you said, have taken what they've had for granted, and maybe losing it will make them a little more militant? And is, I guess the other part of this is this an opportunity for Democrats to come in and say, hey, we believe in collective bargaining rights?
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I don't want to tell anybody who to vote for, but at this point, there's certain members that are like, I don't know if I could ever vote for a Republican ever again at this point. If this is what we're going to have to deal with for 20 to 25 years of a law enforcement agency of, you know, reconciliation, trying to gut all of our benefits. And then every cycle, whenever the pendulum swings back and, you know, okay, now we're going to be trying to get rid of our master agreement, our contract. So well, can the Democrats fix it? I don't know. There's definitely, it's an opportunity for them to come back to maybe what they used to be, more of a law and order, more of a middle class, more of a blue collar type of people, instead of, you know, kind of working the polar opposites, like keeping it way, way left and way, way right. It doesn't, in my eyes, it doesn't work. I think, you know.
Well, ultimately, Dave, I've always believed that we, the working people of this country, we've got to figure out how to get off the sidewalks throwing bombs at each other and get back into the middle of the road and start voting for people. Because look, politicians are just tools. They're like any tool in a toolbox. You use the wrong tool, you're going to get the wrong outcome. And we've been using all the wrong tools. And I think this is one of those moments. And I'm hoping the message out of this is folks in the Bureau of Prisons, folks who work at the VA, folks who work in every other facet of what you guys represent, realize that they are under attack regardless of what their function is, regardless of who they voted for. They're all under attack.
Yeah. And if you want to vote for President Trump, it doesn't mean you can't vote for Democrats for, you know, Senate and the House. Like you could get rid of a veto with two-thirds of the votes. You know, like if you really are behind President Trump and, you know, that's who you want to win and you want to stick with him the whole way, that's fine. But maybe the street level politics of your congressman and senator, you might have to, you know, think of a different avenue. I don't know. I'm always like a split ticket voter. I kind of look at everything.
No, that's great, Dave. But the reality is I haven't found many Republicans who support labor. So it's not surprising to me at all that the Republicans are all 99% of the Republicans are all in on destroying your collective bargaining rights. It's not a shock to me at all. And there's this to me, the question that I have for you, especially in a union that represents people who tend in that direction. Is this the awakening? Is this the moment where they go, I thought they were on our side, and, well, they're not?
I don't know. I wish I had the answers. I wish I had a crystal ball and said, in 2 years, we're going to, you know, the Democrats are going to take over the House and the Senate, and everything will at least have a guardrail. There'll be something there to at least slow down the process. But,
But I go back to what you said earlier. You know, this isn't what your members voted for. Like a lot of people, they believed the sale. They believed the pitch. He's going to lower egg prices, lower gas prices, insurance, rent. Life was going to get easier. Life was going to get cheaper. And the reality is his policies is actually raising the cost of living. And it's going to get much worse if all of these tariffs do go into effect. And look, I'm not an anti-tariff person. I just think the way he's done it has been really bad. And I think we're gonna end up feeling the pain for that. And that's the stuff that trickles down to we in the working class. So for me, the hope is that we can reach across the aisle to voters on the other side and go, hey, maybe we find somebody else.
Yeah. And, you know, just to get back to hopefully bipartisanship, we have a bill in the House right now. It's called HR 2550. You know, there was 220 co-sponsors, and eight of them were Republicans, and now that it hasn't gone anywhere. So Brian Fitzpatrick and Jared Golden, more Jared Golden, he put out a a discharge petition. And now it's starting to, you're starting to see more and more right. people join that. So you'll see all the Democrats, but
so what is
those six Republicans that are left haven't got on the discharge petition. So like you said, we don't know if a Republican is actually supports labor.
Walk us through what that is. You threw out a number there. Nobody knows what the number is.
Well, you need to be 218 to get it passed.
No, the HR.
Oh, HR 2550. Excuse me. I apologize for that. It's to nullify the executive order to get rid of the bargaining, keep our bargaining rights from the executive order that's going through court right now. So you got to pretty much write a law to keep it in line. So
because here's the thing, most people I talk to, especially some of the people I know who are members of AFGE and other federal government unions, they really didn't think that this could happen. I've had people go, I can't believe that he's going to get away with this, because no president should have this kind of sweeping power to swing the pendulum so far to one side. The institutions of our government, the institutions of labor unions, kind of hold us in check, add some guardrails, so we don't end up moving in, well, what I would argue is a fairly fascistic direction.
I have to agree with you on that. It's the middle class, it's the blue collar worker that kind of, I think, builds the country. And it is that guardrail between the two, the haves and the have nots. And like you said earlier, I feel like we're going to be the ones that take the heat, and we're going to take the heavy lifting, and we're going to take a beating on this one.
We always do. I want to go back to your members for a minute, because without a collective bargaining agreement in an at will situation, walk me through what you believe conditions would be in a prison setting, what the corrections officers would have to endure. Is it, double shifts, triple shifts? Is it, staffing changes that could be dangerous? What would, for those of us who have never been in a prison, what would it mean for your members?
So with the bargaining rights, we've negotiated like number twos in a high facility like mine, the United States Penitentiary Canaan. There's two officers to a housing unit. That's in law. That was written into a law that we're supposed to have two officers per housing unit. If we didn't have our collective bargaining rights and we don't have our Title V rights, they could just say, yeah, we're not going to do that anymore. You're going to put one officer to each housing unit. There's 12 housing units. You don't know. And then, your days off used to be Tuesday, Wednesday. Now they're split days off. You're going to have Monday, Thursday off. Like, that's the things that some people need to understand, that this master agreement has us in a pretty decent spot right now with our days off, with our pay, just being able to take a day off without any repercussion. You can just call and say, I'm taking today off. I have to do this. And they just have to take the call, take the sick leave and just move on. They can't scrutinize anything. They have to just take it. And that's all because of a 100-page document that was written years ago that just keeps moving. It's a living document, and we've been saying the show must go on. I hope it continues. We just got to keep pine, like, calling the phones, doing the action alerts, call your congressman directly. They don't want to hear from me all the time in our e-board and our legislative coordinators and all those guys that we work with up there. And thankfully they're ready to make phone calls all day every day, but they don't want to just hear from me. They want to hear from everybody.
No, certainly. I mean, this is a moment where I've been saying you got to make your voice heard. If you're not calling, you're not writing letters to the editors, you're not doing everything you can do, emails, whatever, getting out in the streets, all the bad stuff's going to happen. And for me, it's the organizing that's got to happen right now so that we can fix what's gone bad down the road. So last line of questioning I've got for you, because again, you guys are, labor unions are the last line of defense for democracy, I believe, in this country. And AFGE right now is in the crosshairs. But it's going to be everybody else at some point. So what's the message for union members across this country on what they should be doing in this moment?
Well, they should be calling their congressmen and senators and writing letters, because if they're coming after us, guess who's next? You guys, the rest of the labor unions in the country.
Yep.
So that's how I see it. That's how we see it, is if they're coming after us, there's only, you know, the next sector is your sector.
Yeah, well, an injury to one, an injury to all. Dave, I appreciate you taking time for us. Keep up the fight. I'd love to hear more as this goes down the road. I'm hoping the Supreme Court steps in. I'm not hopeful, but, you know, we'll see. Dave Demas, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Rick.
Dave Demas, president of AFGE Local 3003. Check out the website, afge.org. I want to hear your thoughts. If you're one of those corrections officers, do you feel safe? Do you feel secure without having some bit of backing? You want to work in that kind of an environment? I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at the RickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around.
Covering the games and biggest sports news, listen daily to Mike Clemens on Civic Media.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Civic Media is your spot for sports. From updates on your favorite teams, live broadcasts of the Packers, Badgers, Brewers, and Bucks, and local sports coverage in your community, we've got everything you need. Find a station near you at civicmedia.us or download the free app today. We'll have more news and talk coming up here on Civic Media's stream.
Day one, the hardest day, the day you hear,
this is a type of blood cancer.
But day one is just one day. At the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, we are here to help you move past day one.
On day 45, I discovered an online community who shared great tips for in-treatment care.
I missed a lot of school during treatment, and LLS helped me keep up.
To learn more and get help on day 2, day 28, or any day, please visit lls.org or call 1-800-955-4572.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
A lot of fun going on in Texas. You know, we talked about it yesterday on the program on Friday with Rick Levy. What's going on? Evidently, a bunch of Texas Democrats fled the state on Sunday. Monday, they Republicans came in and voted to have them all arrested. I don't think it's possible. Good luck finding states that will go get them, but... This is the future. This is the future of the red America and blue America. And here to share some thoughts on, well, what this is going to look like, how this is going to play out, or, you know, maybe just something funny out of it. I've asked my good friend Sarah Burris to come share some thoughts. Sarah's a reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how are you?
I'm okay, but I'm looking at this going, you know, is this what's coming? Are we going to even further gerrymander states to where no Democrats are ever going to win an election? Missouri's talking about doing what Texas is doing. Ohio's already done it. Thoughts?
The thing that I keep thinking about is that a lot of red states have kind of already done this. Like they've, especially with Texas, if you look at some of those districts, there's that one that like goes all the way down the center from like Dallas way down to the border, and it's a ridiculous district. I think that this is one of those things where, you know, I think Texas will pick up maybe like 5 seats or something like that. When you have other states like Illinois, New Jersey, New York, California, some of which have those nonpartisan redistrict or bipartisan redistricting committees, they have drawn lines that are not necessarily favorable to one side or the other. So, I mean, I've seen a map for California that eliminates every single Republican in the state and puts them in a district where it's like Harris plus 10. So I think that, you know, if they want to try and get 5 Republicans out of Texas, then you're right. Like this is going to end up in a situation where a lot of these blue states then come in and just hoover up, you know, the opportunity to come up with more Democrats. I don't know that Republicans have a real ability to do anything there.
Yeah, but here's the problem there, because you just said those blue states have got bipartisan, you know, commissions. Can they do this? And the bigger question is, do Democrats have the spine to do it?
So the thing about a lot of these state Democrats is that that's where I feel like a lot of the spine is coming from. People like Gavin Newsom, Kathy Hochul, J.B. Pritzker, those guys are really looking at things outside of that Chuck Schumer, you know, kind of world, where I think there's a real option. I know it'll be difficult, like, to sidestep some of those laws that they have on the books. But again, at the same time, if you've got this war that's sort of happened and you redraw these maps before the election and then inevitably the lawsuits come in, will it be enough time, you know, before the election for all of that to move through, for all of the appeals to go through, and for, you know, them to be able to stop the elections for those seats?
And I guess the other question I have then, Sarah, is this what we want? I mean, is this what our Constitution allows? Is this for the good of the country? Is this any of that?
No, I think it's all terrible. Honest to God, like, I think the Texas thing is terrible. The thing that I do appreciate is that Democrats kind of looked at Texas and said, look, if y'all do this, then we're going to do it. And so that kind of fearlessness and that, you know, like, we're going to come back at you and game on kind of attitude, I appreciate, because that's kind of what we've been looking for from a lot of these Democrats for a while. So, I mean, I appreciate that, but at the same time, like, the whole thing is bonkers. I mean, it's not something that we should be doing, particularly when you're talking about, like, redistricting, you know, in the middle of the decade, right? Like, this isn't even just like, oh, we're going to redistrict and make it all shady at the end of the decade. No, they're doing it again in the middle of the decade.
No, right, like, now. Oh, and then, look, Ohio has been one of the most gerrymandered states in the country. You know, Pennsylvania had been. And fortunately, our Supreme Court overturned a bunch of that. But Republicans have been doing this gaming of the system while all the while complaining that Democrats are cheating, which is kind of hysterical.
It is hysterical. There's a congressman who announced on Monday that he was going to propose an amendment that would basically stop all redistricting in mid-decade, or like when it's not, you know, at the end of the decade. So he's a California Republican. The thing that I love about it is, again, like, this is completely opportunist for him. Like, he's looking at California maps thinking, okay, if they do this, if Texas does this, and then California steps back in and decides to screw up, you know, the maps there,
he's out of a job.
Yeah. Like, he's completely screwed. So...
So radical self-interest.
Yeah.
See, I've always said that I think we should have a law, and it should be kind of like a lottery. We put all the third grade classes, all the teachers' names of all the teachers who teach third grade in the entire state, put it in a big hopper, pull one name out, and that class gets to draw the maps.
That's amazing. That would be entertaining.
It would be entertaining, and you might actually get fair maps.
And I think you would bring kids into the process. So.
And you might get fairer maps. I mean,
true. I don't.
Because you wouldn't have the computer programming that goes into meticulously choosing which voters go in which districts, because that's where we are at this point. It's not voters choosing politicians. The games are already rigged in most states where you don't even have to go and vote. You know which way most districts in this country are going to go. And I don't think voters want that. I want competitive districts. I said, if we're going to gerrymander, and I'm all for gerrymandering, if we're doing it to get 50-50 districts, because now you got to compete for that 1% or 2% either way, then I'm all in favor of it. But if we're making 90% districts or 80%, no, that's not helpful to us.
I agree. I think the only problem that I would worry about with the kids redrawing the maps is the lobbying effort that would go on there. It would involve a lot of candy and toys.
Free juice boxes for everyone.
Everybody. Free M&Ms for everybody. Oh,
but here's the thing. Hold on. Wait a second. Now you've got me thinking. You know, maybe this is how we get college paid for. Maybe this is how we get free lunch programs. Maybe this is how we get health care for children. Maybe this is how we actually give a rat's behind about the kids, because they got a voice in it now.
Yeah, imagine if this was like a poorly funded, you know, inner city school that Republicans hate, or that, you know, they're trying to pull funding from. This would be a great opportunity for kids to come in there and be like, guess what? You're gone.
But last bit on this, because, you know, seriously, this is really setting up a red state, blue state kind of, we're picking sides. You know, which didn't we fight, you know, wasn't there some fighting going on about this kind of stuff?
And I think a lot of folks have talked about how this is a case where whenever you have these extremes on both sides, you end up with these, like you said, these 90 districts that 90-10 districts where the electorate, the extreme electorate is electing the representative in the primary. These aren't general election people. So they're not the kind of representatives that are really indicative of the rest of the country. Like, they're really on both sides of the extreme. And then we end up in a world where you've got Jim Jordan and AOC and nothing in between.
Right. No, and that's part of the problem. In fact, I was just talking about that the other day with someone going, look, I almost missed the blue dogs who kept, you know, things kind of somewhat in the middle of the street. Not a lot, but some at least.
Not Joe Manchin.
Not Joe Manchin, but some that are going, hey, you know, over here to, and the same thing on the right. Look, the right, you know, got rid of all of their moderates, and now you've just got extremists. And again, this is how we're going to end up with red states and blue states, and maybe another shooting war. Who knows? Who knows where this takes us? But I got to get your thoughts on the Smithsonian. I don't know if you saw the story. The Smithsonian's evidently going to restore all of the impeachment information in the coming weeks. And there's going to be an exhibit in the National Museum of American History.
I think I love this idea of they should just do a whole Trump impeachment exhibit, right? Like, they have a whole exhibit about Donald Trump. How could he not love that? But I do think it's funny because this is basically one swing, you know, back and forth with this whole thing where, you know, the Smithsonian said, okay, we're going to cave in and do whatever Trump tells us to. And then now, you know, they're coming back because there's huge backlash. And I mean, the Smithsonian isn't completely fully funded by the U.S. government. Like, they have to rely on donor money too. So imagine if you've got, you know, these big liberal donors who are like, I'm not giving you money if you guys are basically, you know, self-censoring yourself out of fear of the president. Like, that's not what I'm paying for.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see where this all takes us. But here's also some interesting stuff on the retribution, because remember, you know, Trump was going to be the retribution president. He was going to be dictator, and he was going to go after those Democrats. We now see the feds have launched an investigation into Jack Smith.
And Pam Bondi is telling her staff to try and go after Barack Obama, as it turns out, whose birthday was on Monday. So basically what's happening at DOJ is they're trying to come up with some way that they can allege that Jack Smith was doing something shady. I don't know how they're going to figure it out. Like, they're trying to make it seem like it was a Hatch Act violation. The problem is that the consequences of the Hatch Act usually involve like firing the person at the very worst. Jack Smith doesn't work for the government anymore. Like, there's no real, you know, punishment for Hatch Act violations. Plus, they're going to have to come up with what the violation was. This guy, if you remember, like, we watched this for years and the dude was just completely deadpan, like totally silent, never said anything publicly. Because I watched people chase after him with a microphone, and it was just, you know, so I don't know what they think that they're going to be able to get out of him. I just, you know, good luck. Good on you.
Well, no, but what it is it's the same reason that they fired the commissioner at the BLS. We don't like what you did. You don't have a favorite Trump executive order that you can articulate. You did something dear leader didn't like. Name the reason, And the reason being, you're on the wrong side, and now you're going to pay the price. And the message for everybody else is, you better get in line.
It's the retribution part of it. The problem with Smith versus the Bureau of Labor Statistics woman is that Smith, again, doesn't work there anymore. Like, he's gone. So I don't know what it is they think that they're going to be able to do going after him. I mean, at the very least, with Barack Obama, they're trying to indict him on actual crimes. They're, again, not going to do it because the Supreme Court basically said, you know, if you're president, you can do whatever you want. Thanks in part to Donald Trump.
But that was from that order forward, not for that other stuff. And understand, you know, this is one of those things where you have to understand how Trump operates. I don't think it's really about winning or losing. It's just about a matter of keeping you tied up in knots and harassing you. Like a lot of the frivolous lawsuits that he's had filed over the years, it's really about just keeping pressure on until you fold. Not even about anything, or at least that's my opinion. It's not about something that legally is going to happen. It's just a matter of making you miserable.
I think that's true whenever it comes to punching down. He's punching up. Barack Obama is still incredibly popular. He has higher poll ratings than Donald Trump, you know, ever has had, could dream of, right? So he's going to try and punch up at a time when he desperately needs the kind of people who were, you know, independents and Republicans who supported Obama in 8 and 12. So again, good luck with that, mate.
Yeah, no, and look, I keep saying, I see signs around my neighborhood, Donald Trump 2028, and I keep going, okay, well, if that's the case, if we're going to run Trump in 28, Obama is still wildly popular, drag him back in there and see what you get there, Donald, because look, the economy sucks. The economy is not doing great. It's not what we were told. It's not the lower egg prices. I just bought them. It's not the lower gas prices. I just got socked at the pump. It's not about lower rent or car insurance. Got socked on that. Life isn't getting better. And it's only, because understand, the tariffs are about ready to hit Main Street. It's coming. Every economist is now going, not good second half of the year.
One of the interesting stories that I saw on Monday was that China is intentionally holding a lot of mechanical pieces that defense manufacturers rely on to make, you know, U.S. military equipment. And they're intentionally doing it because of the tariff thing. My friend lives on the top floor of a 20-floor building. And one of the elevators has been broken for months now because the part is coming from overseas and there's a tariff in place. And so there's like this big debate over how they get the part. And so it is just, I think a lot of folks don't fully appreciate, you know, it's not just stuff on the shelves at Walmart. You know, it is way more than that.
But here's the thing. This is where my what was wrong with us that we allowed that to happen, especially military wise? Don't we have a Berry Amendment that says you got to make it here?
Yeah. The thing is if it's a special nut or screw or nail or whatever, like stuff like that, you can make those in another country and then just bring them to the U.S. and assemble it. This is how they've gotten away with the idea of like when they were talking about the electric vehicles that you buy, if you want a tax credit for them, they have to be assembled in the United States. And then the Democrats also linked the idea of having the batteries must be made in the U.S. So it's, you know, it's part of that deal that I know the Democrats pushed in. I don't know that Trump's people are smart enough to fully realize, you know, that we're not in a position where we as a country can start making that stuff. Yep. And we could be, we absolutely could be, particularly given the fact that, you know, our unemployment rate is going up and our economy is starting to get, you know, starting to have problems. So, but again, you've got to invest in those things. And there's no way he's going to do that. They just gave tax cuts to billionaires.
No, and here's the thing.
And wants to build a ballroom at the White House.
A McDonald's. I saw this. It's like a McDonald's ballroom. But But here's the thing. I had a listener send me an email saying, hey, you know, in July, we brought in $152 billion into the coffers because of those tariffs. And you know, $78 billion over the last period. So we're bringing in a lot of money. And I go, yeah, are we using it to increase our manufacturing? Or are we just putting it into pockets of rich people?
Yeah, exactly. It is robbed from the poor to give to the rich. And that's what the tariffs are doing. It's the whole idea of, like, again, tariffs are a tax. You're paying this tax. We had a couple of Republicans, was it like last week, the week before, say, oh, I'm gonna come in and issue some sort of check to everybody who's paying for all of these tariffs. So it's like, I'm gonna steal $100 from you, but I'm gonna give you $10 of that back.
That was Josh Hawley.
Yeah.
I was waiting for Sean O'Brien to come out and applaud. Josh Hawley. It hasn't happened yet. Not saying it won't, but it hasn't happened yet. So last question I've got for you, because, you know, obviously the Texas thing's going on, the economy's, not doing great. What distraction are we expecting out of Trump to get the attention back on him?
I think he's going to start pushing this Obama indictment, because that did get a rise out of people more than I think any other distraction has been. But it has been nonstop distraction. I think the larger distraction that came about other than the Obama thing is the idea that Trump moved Maxwell, or let them move Maxwell to this like cushiony prison camp, Hilton, where she can do yoga classes every day. So that's sort of like he was good at distracting for like 12 hours, but then it brought it back. And now people are like, what the hell is this?
So is there clemency, a pardon? Is there anything coming there? Or was it just the move to somewhere cushier?
I do think that the whole, I wonder if this is a link to agreeing to talk to Todd Blanche. You know, they were like, yeah, we'll talk to you, but you've got to put us in a nicer place, or put her in a nicer place. I honestly, I don't know if he is willing to go that far with the pardon or clemency. I can see him doing it like on the last day of office, but I don't know.
I don't think so, because I don't think it doesn't get him anything. If she starts True. Opening her mouth saying, oh, he was there, I saw. Yeah. And the thing is this is where, I'm struggling with caring about this issue, because everybody knows his name's on the list.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question that he was in that world. So, and we've all heard all of the comments. We know who he is. We know how morally bankrupt he is. So I'm like, yeah, of course he's on there. The part for me that's of any interest is the lengths he's going for us not to already see that and confirm what we already know.
It's never the crime. It's always the cover-up.
It's always the cover-up. As always, Sarah, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. I hope folks will check out the website, rawstory.com. Sarah Burris, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Have a good rest of the week, everyone.
You as well. Our good friend, Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. What do you think? Is his name on the list? And really, do you care? I mean, everybody knows who he is. Would it matter? Would it make any difference? Want to hear your thoughts? rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1993. That was the day that the Family Medical Leave Act went into effect. Union members worked hard to support this legislation, testifying before Congress and holding rallies. It was an uphill battle to pass the bill. Starting in 1984, family medical leave was brought before Congress. Year after year, the bill failed to win enough votes. In 1991, it finally passed Congress, but was vetoed by President George H.W. Bush. He vetoed it again the following year. Then, in February of 1992, newly elected President Bill Clinton signed the FMLA into law. It guaranteed that most employers with 50 or more workers must give their employees up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave for a serious health condition for themselves, their spouse, parent, or child. In his speech signing the act, President Bill Clinton declared, quote, "This bill will strengthen our families, and I believe it will strengthen our businesses and our economy as well." He went on to say, I know that men and women are more productive when they are sure they won't lose their jobs because they're trying to be good parents, good children. Our businesses should not lose the services of these dedicated Americans. And over the long run, the lessons of the most productive companies in the world, here at home and around the world, are that those who put their people first are those who will triumph in the global economy. He said that family and medical leave is a matter of pure common sense and a matter of common decency. It will provide Americans what they need most, peace of mind. Never again will parents have to fear losing their jobs because of their families. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So evidently, Donald Trump was not thrilled with Elizabeth Warren's interview on CNBC. Went crazy on his Truth Social, called her Pocahontas and all, you know, typical, you know, presidential, you know, presidential discourse. Evidently calling her a loser, said she lies about everything, including the fact that she's an Indian. She's not. She's no Pocahontas. Ask Pocahontas the real question, CNBC. And you go, she's never mind. And by the way, Marjorie Trainwreck Greene, she's talking about leaving the Republican Party, or they've left her. Not sure what crazy's coming out of there, but more fun and entertainment. And finally, the thing to be really, really concerned about, and we're going to be talking about this in the coming days. I've had a bunch of people ask me, do I think there's going to be an election in 2026? And I've always said, yeah, there's going to be an election in 2026. We're going to get through this. I'm not quite so sure. Given the fact that it looks like the Supreme Court may be ready to strike down what's left of the Voting Rights Act, known as Section 2. I don't know now. And this is one of those things that I'm going to grab some people that I trust on this issue who follow it. But it's, again, you look at all the things that the Republicans are doing to cheat. Now, remember, these are the people who, you know, Democrats were cheating. And yet, you know, as my mother always said, you know, when you point your finger at someone, you've got three pointing back at you. This is that. And the other thing is, you know, if you're accusing someone of doing something, chances are it's what you're doing. Yeah, it's you. So this is what we've got. I am concerned about what's going to happen in the next election, because based on what's happening with the economy, based on what's happening with all of the chaos and all of the, well, you know, we're ramping up tensions around the world, not just on trade, but on the war front. I got to think a lot of the independents, a lot of what's left of the sane, rational Republicans are going to be moving. So Republicans are doing everything they can right now to make sure that they can hold on to power. Gerrymandering, obviously, being a big part of that. But also, we're going to start seeing a lot more, you know, of the purging and the voter suppression and the intimidation. All that's coming, even more than it has been. Because they've got their hands on the wheel and they don't want to let go. So it's one of those things that if you have a thought, I want to hear it. Because I still believe in us. I still believe in we the people. I still believe there's some elasticity left in our institutions to be able to weather even this onslaught. But I'm starting to be less optimistic about that. I'm starting to think that Republicans really are all on the same page and really are ready to just completely chuck the Constitution and cave to dear leader's demands. And that's something red hat, blue hat, no hat, we should be really, really concerned about. So going to be interesting to see. Now, the case that would do that probably won't be decided until June of 26, but something to look forward to just around election time. Want to hear your thoughts? Again, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Freespeech.org. That's where you can go to check out the video and all of that. Want to hear your thoughts again, rick@thericksmithshow.com. As always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Stephanie Officer. Lawyers for Jeffrey Epstein's former companion, Ghislaine Maxwell, say they do not want the DOJ to win its push to release grand jury transcripts in the Epstein case, with her convictions appeal still pending. The Trump administration is now considering publicly releasing transcripts from last month's interview between Maxwell and Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche behind bars. ABC's Aaron Katursky.
In the week and a half since that unusual meeting, Maxwell has been moved from a federal prison in Florida to a minimum security camp for women in Texas, a rare move for a convicted sex offender.
A pilot of a small plane was able to walk away from a crash into the water off North Carolina's coast. Mark Finkelstein told ABC affiliate WWAY he suddenly lost power and had to make a split-second decision to try and land in the water.
There wasn't time to be afraid. Once it stopped, I just said, okay, I'm really going to be doing a water landing. You know, there's no alternative at this point.
Rescuers came to his aid on boats and jet skis. This is ABC News. Police say a